Hey guys, we're back, and this is our June episode of Classic Camera Revival, and we are going to be talking about the camera that probably get us the most amount of attention when we're out shooting them on the street, and that is TLR, or twin lens reflex, and we all love a good TLR here. In fact, we all have TLRs to show off today, so let's get rolling!
Coming to you live from Toronto, Canada, this is the Classic Camera Revival. If you don't have gear acquisition syndrome now, you certainly will after listening to our show.
All right, so let's start it off with the most unique TLR here on the table, and the only one TLR out there that you can swap out the lenses. And we are talking about the Mamiya C series.
Well, Mamiya medium format cameras, when you go above the 645, you need a gym membership to go with them. Now, the C220 isn't too bad as far as wave compared to an RB67, in which case, yeah, you need CrossFit. I love my C220. I've had it for probably 6+ years. I've got 90% of the lenses for it, save for the 250mm. It's the camera I go to if I know I'm going to need more than one focal length, but I want to shoot medium format. Switching the lenses in and out is a breeze compared to Hasselblad, which you probably have to do. We won't go there. There was an episode about that a few months ago. I've used this camera for long exposure and night photography work, which examples exist online. And I've used it by the beach, and I've even used it as a walk-around camera. So it's a great all-around medium format camera. I also own a Series E 3.5 planar Rolleiflex and a couple of Rolle cords and an auto cord. But yeah, this is one that can go toe-to-toe with those quite easily.
Oh yeah.
And actually, the C-Series Mamiya, I think, was the wedding photographer's choice of rig back in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah. If they wanted the 6x6, they'd definitely go with that, unless they were shooting the M645, definitely. It's just an absolutely beautiful camera. Does it have bellows?
Yes.
Nice.
This is the other plus with a C-Series camera. You can do close-up work with it, which you can't do with other TLRs.
No.
Yeah, not without the attachments, which also means parallax correction. Yes, I know with a C220 you're going to need parallax correction, but usually with like the Rolleiflex or the Rollecord, you had the close up attachment, and then you had the extra attachment that you had to put on the taking lens or the viewing lens for parallax correction, and yada yada yada.
No, it's definitely a beautiful camera.
How close does it focus? I've never gotten a clear answer. He's checking the focus right now, and all I know is it's getting longer and longer.
I think I can go as close as...
This camera definitely does not have a nickname of Ed.
Yeah, closest I think is a meter, 3 feet.
No, not bad.
Not bad, not bad.
You throw a longer lens on it, and you're golden.
Oh, yeah. And the longest lens for the C-Series TLRs is 250mm.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's the one I don't own. I go from 55 to 180. The lens hoods can be a little tricky to find. Just a heads up if you're contemplating, hey, this is a system I want, a medium format system I want to get involved with. You got to be patient and be prepared to spend some money on the accessories. The camera itself, you can probably find them. They're starting to creep up in price. Yeah. And, of course, the lenses, the lens series you do want, if you're getting into a C-Series Mamiya, is you want the ones with the little blue dot.
Yes, definitely.
The blue dot indicates that the coatings that it's on the front element, that it just makes it magic.
So kind of like... stepping back in time to our previous episode with like the Canon, when you had the SC and then the SSC, and when you wanted a coating, you wanted the SSC.
Definitely. Nice. Next up, we have a pile of Rolleiflexes. So to prove that you don't actually need a planar, we have John.
What? Hey, yeah, you don't need a planar. Why bother? God.
I'm going to talk about my Rolleiflex 3.5 E3, which is actually a rather uncommon model. There really isn't much of a collector premium for it, though. They're only about 4,000 made, according to the book. And it's basically like it's a transitional model, close to an F, but it does not have the meter built in. But you can, the idea was you could go and buy the meter afterwards. It has the wiring, and then just roll it in. And this one has the Schneider Zenitar 3.5 lens, and it's not a planar, but the 3.5 Zenitar is an amazing lens, and I've always been very, very happy with the results that I've gotten. And like what I would say, if you're considering getting a Rolleiflex, yes, the planar lens is beautiful. I've got one for my Hasselblad. I love how it looks on the Hasselblad, but if you want the planar and the Rolleiflex, you are going to pay the planar penalty.
I thought that was the planar premium. Well, I like your terminology a lot better.
Take your pick. You're going to shell out a lot more coin. I'd say the difference in price, all of the things being equal, between the planar and the Zenitar model is $300-$400, perhaps five. The one I have, I consider this one of my bargains because cosmetically it does have some staining. It's definitely a user, not a looker, but it also came with an aftermarket focusing screen, which is quite bright. And with shipping, this was maybe a little over $500.
Hey, actually, that's a steal.
That's a good price.
And every now and then you see these things on Twitter or Facebook. You know, if you had to choose one camera, one lens, like let's say an interchangeable lens, and make do with that the rest of your life, this is probably the camera that I would choose. I have a bad back. That's why, you know, I don't carry a Pentax 6.7 anymore, or my RZ67 sits on the shelf most of the time. For what it is, this is not a heavy camera. If you have a nice, you know, soft strap.
Yeah, like a neoprene strap. Yeah, they're great.
Then you can carry this around all day. I actually have a couple of the Rolleinar close-up attachments, and I have the number 2 and the number 3, and I quite like them because now there are two pieces. There's one for the taking lens, and then the piece for the viewing lens, as long as you mount it properly, has a prism built in, which does a very, very good job of accounting for parallax. And it's funny that you know, quite often, like auxiliary close-up lenses tend to be sort of cheesy, but the Rolleinar ones, you get very, very nice results. Because like, the one thing, like the Rolleiflex is not a close-up focusing camera. It's not a bellows like the Mamiya. Just while we're talking about lenses that aren't planar, I'd also say that, you know, some of the older models have Tessars. There's a reason why the Tessar formulas lasted forever. Might be a bit soft around the corners, wide open, but that's still great for portraiture. I've even seen nice work with Rolleicords using the Triotar, which is a triplet lens, perhaps not quite as refined, but you get a neat look. So I guess what I'd say to wrap up my piece is, just because it doesn't say planar doesn't mean it's not worthy of serious consideration on your part.
No, definitely not. I have the Rolleiflex 2.8F, which does have the planar lens on it. And I've talked about this camera before back in our 6x6 episode, so I'm really not going to talk much on the camera, but rather the lens. And the one thing that the lens does suffer, and most early planars do, is lens flare. It's definitely a camera that you'll want to try and find a lens hood for. And I'm lucky in the sense that I got the Bay 3 lens, and that is one thing that is really difficult with a lot of these TLRs, is finding the bayonet.
Yeah, the bay filters.
The bay filters and the bay hoods, and the bay accessories. And they can be a bit of a premium cost. Again, I went to some of the local camera shows. I found a nice yellow, nice green, and the hood. And I was able to trade some Russian cameras to knock the price down.
You'd have to trade a lot of Russian cameras.
let's see here. Kiev 88 with a couple of lenses and a Zorky 4 with a couple lenses.
Oh, well, the Kiev 88, just that alone. That's the, yeah. What, the Frankenblad, the 1000F or whatever?
That's their... Their version of the Hasselblad, definitely.
I took a different approach to the filter problem. I went on eBay, and for about $5, shipping included, I got
an adapter,
a Bay 2 to I think 49 millimeter screw adapter.
Yeah.
And I can just use step up rings. I've had filters as big as 58 millimeters across on this camera without it interfering with the viewing lens.
Wow, that's fantastic.
And I'd rather, and $5. Like it's again, it's your cheap Chinese filter. It'll wear out eventually. It'll get worn down.
Yep.
I'll buy another one.
For $5. Definitely. For
$5, that's what you can buy almost 20 of them half the time for just a Bay 1, not even Bay 3, but a Bay 1 yellow are usually selling, especially if it has the Rolleiflex branding on it, easily selling for $100.
Yep.
Now, if you are looking at the Rolleiflex's prosumer cousin, the Rolle Cord, it takes the same Bay 1 accessories as a Yashica, Minolta Auto Cord.
Yeah.
So,
or the early model, like I have the Rolleiflex Automats. With the 3.5 Zenar.
Actually, the 3.5 Zenar is a great lens as well.
And they used it on their Rolle Cord models. Yeah. And I've had excellent results with the Schneider Zenar.
So. Yeah.
And the nicest looking TLR of all time, in my opinion, I would love to have an Art Deco Rolle Cord.
They are beauty of a camera. Really are.
And James here has a step up from my 2.8F.
It's a 2.8E.
2.8E.
I don't know if it's a step up. I think yours might be a step up to mine.
It's really hard to
tell. 56. Yours was a 60, I believe.
69. Yeah.
69. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, so.
Never mind. that's a different podcast.
Absolutely.
is that like your last call out was, what was it? You can
wine me, dine me, 6x9 me.
There we go.
We're referring to negatives, people.
Yes. Get your mind out of the gutter.
6x9 is referring to, but
get your mind out of the gutter.
Well, circa 1956, Rolleiflex E with a 2.8 planar on it. Great lens. This one has the built-in Gaussian meter, this was built in from the factory, but you can get these as add-ons. Interesting way to meter with this camera. Actually, I had to do a bit of research to kind of figure out the dim light and the bright light switch. So, at the side of the meter, there's a little switch, and you actually have to decide whether or not you're metering in bright light or dim light.
Interesting.
Yeah. So if you take a look at it, there's when you slide the switch down, there's a little red dot that appears, and that means you're shooting in dim light. And basically, if you have it slit up, you're shooting in bright light. Now, don't ask me what the quantifiable measurements are for bright light or dim light. I have yet to find out, to be honest. But if anyone out there knows, please email us. We'd like to know. I'd like to know.
Email us, leave a comment.
Yeah. Pardon me. And along with that, if you look at the exposure setting dial, there are two windows to set your EV. And there's one that's surrounded by a red frame and one that's not surrounded by a frame at all. So if you're shooting with the dim light option, so showing the red dot,
you look at the one with the red frame.
Exactly.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's quite interesting. And, the way I've been using it, if I'm shooting, anywhere from between 10 and 4 p.m., I'm shooting in bright light, and we're talking about daylight conditions here. And if I'm shooting in any of the golden hours or towards the, end of the golden hour in the evening or, early dawn shooting, I'm generally going with dim light. Obviously, if I'm doing exposing for shadows or I'm in a fairly harsh shadowy area, I'll switch to dim light. The meter, given its age, it's pretty good. Selenium based meter. This one happens to still be working.
Yeah, mine works in mine as well.
It's a good camera. As far as the camera itself goes, and I'm quite envious of John's very bright, I think he's got a BD Intense screen, focusing screen on his camera. And I was quite surprised to hear he only paid around $500 for it, because I recently priced out on Fleabay a BD Intense Screen. I found one in the entire universe of eBay and landed at my door. It was going to cost me about $365 Canadian for that. So, you know, I am going to be knocking John over the head on his way out today, and I will have myself a new screen. So
not
probably
the Pentax, I hope.
That's why I brought the Pentax. But yeah, it's the screen is a little, for me, it's a little bit tough to focus on. The rollies of this vintage, the E in particular does not have an interchangeable screen. Although it is interchangeable, you actually have to remove the hood.
Disassembly.
Yeah. Yeah, four screws. But some of the, like the F, I believe, the waste level finder can actually pop
right off.
And
yeah.
you can
actually get a prism finder for it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Four very tiny screws.
Yes. Yeah, four very... So when I got this camera, I did do some disassembly just for cleaning and inspection, and those are some pretty small screws.
I've seen some bigger screws on Mac laptops.
Yeah, so...
and they're flat. That's the worst.
They are flat.
They're flathead.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah.
Anybody that's ever done anything with flathead screws will be
horrible.
They will swear and curse at them, because it doesn't matter what you do, the screwdriver does not hold.
Yeah,
them.
No.
Yeah. So the PETA factor on this camera is high. As far as exposing on this camera, there's two ways to do it. If you are using the built-in meter, then you're going to expose by EV. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of dials on the face of the camera. One sets the shutter speed, and then the other sets the aperture. And basically what you do with it is you match the EV value that the meter gives you to the front dial.
So it's not a coupled meter.
It is not a coupled meter. No,
that's also what Ricoh did with their Diacord. Was very, okay. very similar to the EV system.
Yeah. I believe in the F, the meter is
coupled.
Yeah. So, you know, previous generation to that. You know, as far as the value of these things go, the planars, I find, like as John mentioned, anywhere from $400 to $800 price differential. You know, I mean, whether or not it's worth it is personal taste. You know, I think as far as some of the market influences go, you know, with the recent discovery of relatively recent discovery of Vivian Mayer's work,
that's and, really driven up the price.
Yeah, and definitely. her use of the camera, which is, you know, somewhat ironic or counterintuitive, because it's not the, you know, at least in my opinion, I think most of us share this opinion, the camera does not take the picture. It's the photographer that does. But, you know, when something looks cool and hipsters start getting attracted to it.
It's the planar factor.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's, yeah, and the TLR and,
The cool factor.
And, like, the hip, you know, it's a hip thing to have a TLR. And, hey, it's a great conversation starter. You know, when you're walking around with this thing, lots of people will stop you. And I really do think, you know, I have seen the documentary, Vivian Mayer's documentary or Mayer's documentary a few times. And it is very true. Like some of the comments there were like, this camera is kind of the disguise camera. You can shoot very discreetly, you know, with any camera with a waist level finder. But this one in particular, not too many people will notice you're shooting with it. So if you're into street photography and you're really good at zone focusing and nailing your exposures really, really well, quickly, it's a great camera for street shooting as well.
I agree, because it's nice quiet shutter, for starters. And I'm not sure if it's the exact same on that model, but one thing I really like, I love the way the depth of field indicator works.
Yes.
On the
I think it's very elegant.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Roloflex definitely... Frank and Hideki on the Roloflex Rolocord, they definitely did it right from the beginning, right from the very original TLR that they produced. And you can actually, if you have the money available, you can actually still get modern Roloflexes.
It's the iconic TLR,
yeah,
essentially.
Right? You see any graphic of a TLR, it's a Roloflex.
And the proof of them getting it right is over the multiple decades that these
were
made.
They didn't change much.
Exactly. How much did the fundamental model change?
And not much at all. They just kept on refining, like the E to the F, right? You now have coupled metering. You don't have the little switch. Gone away is that. But essentially, it works almost the exact same way. They've just, over time they've seen stuff like, oh, well, this could be better, and they've just fixed that. They haven't done a complete total overhaul.
Yeah, because even if you watch even like some of the older movies, even some of the newer movies, heck, I watched, Bad Boys, Will Smith, and Martin Lawrence. One scene, they're running through a photography studio, and even though it was just a glimpse of the camera,
you knew. It was a Rolleiflex.
Yeah, hands down, you knew exactly what it was.
I was, one of the first times I was in New York City, I was walking through Central Park, and I happened across a film shoot, and a crew member came over and said, hey, can you just sort of stand in the background and take a photo of this couple? Because I had the Rolleiflex, and they wanted that. I was in the background.
I would have asked to get paid.
I have my own New York story. I was shooting with my Rolly cord, and I had people, New Yorkers, come up to me and just start, you know, chatting, which is sort of, when you get the idea of New York, it's like, you know, the locals don't suffer fools gladly, but when they're genuinely curious, they're extremely nice people. And I had compliments on it, the camera in a couple of different neighborhoods.
Yeah. So switching gears away from Rolleiflex is another iconic TLR, and actually my first real TLR with a Yashica 12. Absolutely fantastic camera, but that is not the camera that Donna has.
No, today I'll be talking about the Yashica A. It's not as beautiful as the Rolly cords here on the table. Rolleiflexes. But what inspired me to get something similar was I couldn't afford the Rolleiflexes. They were a lot of money. And again, Vivian Myers being mentioned earlier, I've seen a lot of her work and her street photography. And I'm not very big on street photography, and I wanted to really start to try and get into it a little more than what I am now. So I went with the Yashica A. I just recently got it, actually. So I just put my first roll of black and white reversal film in it. So I'll share the pictures once I develop them later on today. But what I really like about the camera is it's very, very light, especially if you want to go do your street photography out there. It's light. It's got a very big viewfinder on the top of it for those of you that are blind like myself. I really don't know what to say. It's a beautiful camera. It's got a cold shoe on it for those of you that want to put a flash on there. I don't know.
There are people out there who swear by Yashica cameras. I know my friend Julie, the woman who taught me black and white film developing and black and white printing, ran with, she should still have her Yashica 124G, which was the penultimate Yashica TLR. And yeah, those lenses will give the Zeiss glass.
Well, the lens on Schneider, it is pretty.
Schneider glasses an easy run for their money. Even the Mamiya Sekor, and you don't pay the price, the same premium price. No. Well, you will for the 124G.
It's really gone up in price the last few years,
especially from Vivian Meyer. It has driven up the 124G.
A friend of mine, Ori, he had the Yashica mat, and he was actually the one that actually told me, if you really want one, you can't afford the Rolleiflex, I recommend getting a Yashica line. So he was one of the main reasons why I got this one.
No.
Even like the Yashica D used to be like a $50 camera.
Oh, yeah.
Not anymore.
No.
The Yashica A is actually still very, very low priced as far as all TLRs that I can think of. I mean, even the Seagull TLR, which is a Chinese knockoff of a Rolleiflex, but they're really high priced. And one of the reasons for that is actually the lens. Now, it's using the same construction, say, like the Trilouser and their earlier models, or like the Pigeon Flex, which is actually a Yashica model, which is a triplet lens. Now, the Yashimar lens that she has on her Yashica A has, it's, it does not have like the same look as like a Yashinon or a Tessar, but that's simply because of the construction. It's a triplet lens. At the same time, triplet lenses are fantastic. Like they will give you a really, really sharp centered image, whereas in the corners, it'll soften out, but that's usually for shooting wide open. I mean, once you start stopping down like 5.6, f8, you're going to get some tack sharp images, and the background swirl that you get on the Ashimars are rather unique.
Nice.
One thing I can say about it, though, it does focus pretty smoothly. It is easy to focus, but whenever you are out in the rain, I don't recommend using it because it's very hard to see your images, and especially if it's cold and the lens just really fogs up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But other than that, the focus, it's pretty smooth.
And that's even using the critical finder magnifier on there.
Okay.
A little bit of water on the screen, it doesn't matter how well you're using that critical focusing. It's really
hard to see it.
Yeah.
But other than that, though, if you can't afford the Rolleiflex or Rolleicord, I would highly recommend getting a Yashica A or Yashica Matte, whatever.
And you can
line you can
definitely.
And you can usually sell them back. Or sell them, not quite sell them back, but sell them again if you're wanting to start funding for that Rolleiflex or higher end model of Yashica Matte. Usually, you can get the exact same money you paid for it.
Nice. And to close it off, we have the only North American camera on the table, and that is Mike with a Kodak. Now, is that an actual TLR?
This is a 100% fully functional actual TLR.
So it's not a pseudo TLR.
This is not pseudo. This is a true TLR,
nice.
Which uses a helical focusing as opposed to a moving bed. So it works
the same way as like a Lubitel.
If you're used to Lubitel, exactly. In fact, Lubitel actually took this design and used it on their line. In fact, the Argus uses it. There's another model I'm trying to remember. But eventually, maybe it'll come to me, maybe it won't. Now, the one thing about this camera is this was actually a direct competition to the Rolleiflex. Now, we're talking early Rolleiflex. This is a mid-1940s camera.
Okay.
Now, the Kodak Reflex, it had speeds up to 1/200th of a second.
Makes sense.
And had a nice wide 3.5, so fairly quick lens.
Yep.
I mean, it's not an f4, so it's not bad. Now, the only issue I have, and this is actually one of the reasons why I'll tell most people to avoid the Kodak Reflex Model 1, is the focusing screen is extremely dim.
Okay.
Now, Kodak actually realized this, and they were losing sales to the Rolleiflex because of the screen. It was actually dimmer than the Rolleiflex. So what they did on their Reflex 2 model, which is the one I would highly recommend if you're looking for an inexpensive TLR to go with, because it's actually using a Fresnel screen.
Okay.
In fact, I haven't personally held one. I haven't looked through it to really say that, but I've read the different wikis on the Reflex 2, and they basically said that the Kodak Reflex 2 has a much brighter screen than the Rolleiflex, and they were trying to pull sales away from the Rolleiflex and bring it to their North American line.
Now, yeah.
Did it work? Well, Kodak did sell a lot of cameras in North America, and since it was also the Reflex 1 was post-war, so this one was released during and after World War II. So
are we talking when the U.S. entered World War II?
Well, this is post-war, right?
So it's
like 1945, 1946.
Okay.
I believe when the Kodak Reflex was first introduced, and then come the 1950s when the Reflex 2 came out, they were using the much brighter screen, and it was brighter than the Rolleiflex. Now, of course, Rolleiflex changed all that,
right?
They started going with the 2.8 lens and yada yada, and their screens did get better. But I have a feeling one of the reasons why their screens actually got better was probably because Kodak was saying, hey, guess what? Not only do we make really, really good film that you're putting in that Rolleiflex, but we can come in under the cost of a Rolleiflex with a brighter screen for more accurate photos with that film.
And what sort of lens does that thing come with?
Now, this lens comes with what is called the Anastigmat 80mm 3.5 lens. Now, it's using the 80mm, which is actually 5mm short... longer than the Rolleiflex, which was usually a 75mm, big deal. I mean, we're talking minuscule. But the Anastigmat lens, this was actually their professional line of lenses at the time. This eventually turned into their Ektar line, which, I mean, you had the Anastar, which was a step down. Then you had their Anastigmats. I don't know if this is the triplet or if this is the four element Tessar type design. I can't remember exactly. I haven't really
looked. Because I use a 170 millimeter 1921 Kodak Anastigmat for my 4x5. And it really surprised me that it does nothing weird. I really wish it did, but it doesn't. So,
well, I took one photo on this that I basically just named Leica Swirl, simply because it was a photo of a Leica that I put on a log, and this was at the minimum focus that I had it, and the swirl in the background was unreal. So the minute I saw that, I knew that this camera, just that kind of an image that if people were taking it for, say, portraits or anything like that, this camera, just the swirl alone will sell this camera to modern photographers.
Oh, definitely.
Especially the ones that are like bokeh and swirl obsessed. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. Definitely. You probably heard me ask if it was a pseudo TLR. Now, I said
like
that...
Like Duaflex.
Exactly, because there are a lot of cheap consumer cameras that came out that looked like a TLR, but they weren't, simply because it's a fixed focus lens and nothing moves. It just, you compose it with a waist level finder, but
yeah, it's with the nothing meniscus changes. Lens. Yeah,
yeah.
Now that's the thing with this camera is it does say Kodak Reflex, and if you do a search. There was a Kodak Reflex pseudo TLR, and it is very clear that is a pseudo TLR. It is plastic. You can very clearly see that it's Bakelite plastic.
Yeah.
And I believe the Reflex was a 127 camera.
Yeah.
Which was 127 film. I feel so bad for that because it is such a really, really neat format. But it was like stuck with all the crap cameras.
Really?
Other than the Rolleiflex.
They had the baby Rolleiflex and the baby Yashica that took 127 film. That wraps it up for this episode.
One other thing, and I remember how we were talking about the bay filters.
Yes.
The one thing about this is it takes series press-on filters.
Oh, nice.
So they're a lot less expensive.
Yep.
And not only can you use it on this, because this is actually the exact same opening size, like series filter, as I believe the Metalist and the Ektar 127 for large format.
Nice. Nice. Okay, well, that about does it. My name's Alex Lokes, and I'm definitely hoping to give my twin lens a little bit more love this year.
This is John Meadows. If you haven't shot a twin lens reflex, give it a try. You'll love it.
This is Mike Pataxi, and if you've ever tried twins, you know what's best.
This is Bill Smith. I love TLRs way better than Hasselblads.
This is James Lee. Two lenses are better than one.
And this is Donna Pataxi. If you haven't tried the Yashica, give it a try.